Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic. Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest. If
no, that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
When was the last time you played chess? Are you into Monopoly, Catan? A lot of people are. They're becoming a really big part of socialising, particularly for younger Australians. So are board games becoming cool? G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you back. Coming up, we're hearing from those who cannot get enough of their chess clubs.
It was like really uncool to play chess. And when I tell people, they're like, that's so nerdy. To now when I say like, oh, I play chess, people are like, oh, that's so cool. Like they think you must be so smart.
Interesting. If you can relate to this, it may not be chess, may not be a board game. Maybe it's cards you're into. What is it that gets you and your mates excited about these analogue activities? Message in 0439 757 555. Also coming up in a bit, we're going to explain a Donald Trump announcement that has freaked a lot of people out. First though.
Hack. He's taken the trust of a young, vulnerable woman and completely betrayed it.
On Triple J.
We place so much trust in doctors, like whether it's a GP, a specialist. When you go in to ask an expert for help, you're often in a pretty vulnerable situation. Maybe you're in pain. You might be scared. You don't know what is happening with your body. So imagine how horrifying it would be to undergo an invasive, serious procedure. You were told that you needed for a severe condition, only to be told by other doctors later that you never needed it in the first place. This is what the ABC's Four Corners has been investigating, and reporter Louise Milligan is with us now to tell us about what she has discovered here. Louise, thank you so much for joining us. Firstly, I want to know, how did this story come about?
Last year, we did a story for Four Corners called God Complex, which was about a neurosurgeon at Melbourne's Epworth Hospital. We had a massive response to that story, and we had health professionals and patients around the country contacting us about other issues and other doctors in other hospitals. But there was one that really stood out, one tip off, and it was essentially that there was a surgeon in Melbourne who was a gynecologist, and he was apparently unnecessarily removing reproductive organs and tissue from women, saying they had endometriosis in circumstances where they didn't. It was so extreme that we thought that it warranted further investigation. And so we've been looking at it for 7 months now.
I want to know, what are some of the serious allegations you heard? What are some of the most disturbing things you found out?
Well, there's a young woman called Courtney Patton who had 7 laparoscopies by the time she was 25 years old and had both of her ovaries and her uterus removed. So Courtney is now infertile for supposed severe endometriosis. Not until we actually asked her to request her pathology did she find out there was no endometriosis on the samples for the operations again and again and again. There was only one operation, which was her second, in which there was a sort of a microscopic tiny amount consistent with endometriosis, but not severe endometriosis, and it certainly wasn't in any of the others. And we sent all of her materials to Professor Thierry Van Kai, who's considered the father of laparoscopic surgery in Australia, and he told us this surgery was unnecessary and he felt sickened that it happened.
Another person you spoke to was Mary. Can you tell us a bit more about Mary's story?
Yeah, so Mary Spanos was actually the first patient that we spoke to. Mary went to see Simon Gordon and she said that he essentially badmouthed her previous surgeon and told Mary that the previous surgeon hadn't got all the endometriosis. Anyway, she came out of the surgery and she said that she felt in much more pain after the surgery than she did before. And she didn't feel very validated by Simon Gordon. She said that she felt he was being dismissive of her pain. And that made Mary quite angry. And so Basically, she requested her histopathology, and the histopathology showed no sign of endometriosis.
There were 5 separate pieces of tissue that had been sent off to pathology, and all of them came back saying no endometriosis present. And his handwriting was right next to it saying nil. I just broke out in a sweat, broke out in tears, and I just was in shock.
So to be clear, Louise, Mary had essentially had this procedure for a condition which those results indicate she did not have.
Yes, and we also sent Mary's results to Professor Van Kai, and he also agreed that this surgery was unnecessary.
Right, this is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with investigative reporter Louise Milligan about the story she's done for Four Corners this week. It's detailing complaints of patients of a well-known gynecologist. Louise, can you tell us more about this surgeon, Simon Gordon?
One of the really interesting things about this story is Dr. Simon Gordon was not, you know, some sort of unheard of gynecologist operating in a remote hospital or something like that. This was, by one set of data that we saw, the busiest laparoscopic surgeon at Epworth, which is the largest private hospital in Victoria. He was renowned on, you know, social media, and he was seen as a sort of a guru. When we started investigating, Simon Gordon chose to retire. So he said it was to spend time with his family. In December, he withdrew his registration from ARPRA, the medical regulator. We obviously wanted to speak to Simon Gordon. We're interested in doing an interview with him, as we always would be in these circumstances. We asked him several times and the answer was always no, but he sent us a statement saying, you know, words to the effect of that he only ever did these surgeries if it was necessary to alleviate women's pain. You know, his view is that endometriosis has been ignored for a long time and women felt their suffering wasn't validated, and he was seeking to validate the suffering. But, you know, at what point does validating suffering tip over into something that is really concerning? Certainly the Federal Health Minister, Mark Butler, feels that.
Well, it goes without saying, these women have been let down by the system, and really our job now is to determine how we can ensure this doesn't happen again, and how, if these allegations are proven, this person is brought to justice.
And the minister wrote to his Victorian counterpart, Mary-Ann Thomas, the health minister here in Victoria, requesting that she consider setting up an inquiry. I understand that there is likely to be an announcement about this later in the week. And I should also say that Medicare is investigating as well, because the item number being charged for this surgery, which is called a 35641, is the sort of most expensive item number in laparoscopic surgery. It's designed for severe endometriosis, and these women did not have severe endometriosis, according to the pathology and according to the experts who reviewed their materials for Four Corners. And Epworth itself has also commissioned an external review.
You have spoken with other experts in gynecology, and a lot of them also saying that there are kind of barriers to other doctors coming forward and reporting stuff.
Yes, we spoke to, in particular, Dr. Shami Kathrasinghe. It's difficult to come forward, particularly as a woman in medicine. You rely on the patronage of other doctors, and there is a lot of fear.
I think most of us are scared.
Why is that?
Many of us who've ever, throughout our career, if we've ever tried to speak up, we've often been punished for speaking up.
I have to say that interview with Shami was one of the most extraordinary interviews I've done. You know, she was trembling. Now, what does that say? She is an incredibly well-qualified gynecologist who was trained at Oxford, and yet she has this fear about speaking up. And I think if there's one thing to come out of this story, it has to be it's safer for medical professionals to be able to make complaints about serious concerns about their colleagues. It's not good enough that these people feel so scared.
Four Corners investigative reporter Louise Milligan, thank you so much for taking time to speak with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
And if you do want to see that full story, Four Corners on ABC iView, ABC News Online as well, you can read that whole article. We're hearing from you on the text line now, Blake, saying, as a newly graduated doctor, hearing what Louise is saying is making me sick to my stomach. Another person, a similar message, hearing this makes me violently ill. Look, let's get another view on this now. And joining me is Syl Friedman, who is an endo and women's health advocate. She started Endo Active, and we often speak with Syl on Hack. Syl, thank you so much for joining us. With some really confronting stuff we've just heard, serious allegations there. What's important to say, yeah, these are allegations. They're being investigated right now. But what people have told Louise is really serious. I guess questions I have are, what should you do if you feel unsure about something your doctor is telling you about endo? Like if you go and you ask for some advice, you ask for some help, and then you're unsure about what they're saying, what do you do?
You can always seek an opinion. I mean, patients should, as scary as these allegations and these stories are, and they're awful, you know, I don't want patients to feel afraid of seeking medical help. That's really, really important. And trust your gut. Ask for those records. You know, our medical records are ours. It's your body. And during a laparoscopy, quite often there will be photographs taken, imagery done, sometimes a video. So of course you can ask for those records and hand it over to another doctor if you'd like a second opinion.
It's really good advice there. And, you know, Syl, we're hearing from so many people on our text line now. Someone says, I have endometriosis, adenomyosis, and I'm so glad this is being spoken about. Another person says, I'm going through the process of getting diagnosed with endo at the moment. It's really awful. Hear stuff like this with what is already such a scary space. Yeah, is there any like final advice you have, Syl, for someone who might be a bit scared at the moment, hearing some of this stuff and just unsure what steps they should take if they feel like something's not right?
I think take it slowly. You don't need to rush into any procedure of any kind and talk to other people. Ask, you know, there's such big online presence now of health advocates and people with endo and patients talking to each other. You know, you can ask people for their opinion on your doctor if that makes you feel more comfortable. Encourage your medical team to share your records with each other. So that's something that I do as a patient now. I will ask that whatever tests and things that the screening I have is shared with the rest of my medical team so that if one clinician misses something, but hopefully another one will pick it up. The only other thing I can say is that the medical culture and underreporting is a major issue here. This is nothing to do with patients not doing their homework.
Well, look, Syl Friedman from Endo Active, I really do appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
Thanks, Dave.
And I should also say that, you know, obviously these are allegations that are being investigated. If you do want to read the full story, there is a statement from the surgeon, Simon Gordon, in that news story on ABC News Online. You can find that all on the ABC website. You can also read the full article and watch Louise Milligan's Four Corners as well. We're going to move on.
Hack. The Supreme Court's ruling on tariffs is deeply disappointing.
On Triple J.
Just when you thought you'd stop hearing the word tariffs, it's back. Because once again, the US president's made a big call, sending shockwaves around the world. The US Supreme Court made a decision that annoyed Donald Trump, and now he's vowing to reinstate these tax hikes, these tariffs. So what does all this mean? Louise Milan explains.
Foreign countries that have been ripping us off for years are ecstatic, and they're dancing in the street.
It's been a big weekend for Donald Trump after the US Supreme Court shredded his main trade policy. In the days since, the president's been doing what he can to turn it around.
They won't be dancing for long.
A quick explanation.
My favorite word is tariff.
So tariffs are taxes that companies pay on stuff imported or exported to or from different countries. And introducing them has been a big part of the current Trump presidency.
April 2nd, 2025 will forever be remembered as the day American industry was reborn.
Back in April last year, Donald Trump announced sweeping tariffs on goods being imported into America. He called that big announcement Liberation Day.
And the day that we began to make America wealthy again.
In the end, Australian companies did well, relatively speaking, with the lowest rate of tariffs at 10% in most cases. Now, the Supreme Court's weighed in, saying the whole scheme was against the law.
Many outlets would convey it as a major blow to the president's policy.
Kathleen Clawson is a law professor who used to work high up in the office of the US Trade Representative.
No doubt he was very angered by the outcome.
The rulings also come from a Supreme Court Donald Trump had been trying to control.
I'm ashamed of certain members of the court.
Since the court ruling, Donald Trump's come up with a new way through, first announcing a 10% universal tariff before ramping it up to 15% one day later.
Trump has decided instead, well, okay, now I'll use another law to raise a tariff, probably just because he was in a bad mood.
Tariffs are inflationary.
So what does this mean for us in Australia? Well, the government says it's examining all the options.
We repeat our view that these tariffs are unfair.
Australia's main exports to the States are gold, pharmaceuticals, and meat, like lamb and beef. When the Liberation Day tariffs came in, farmers here were worried, but eventually they got an exemption. The Australian Meat and Livestock Association's confident that will happen this time too.
The insights that we've had is that beef is likely to remain at zero duty.
Jack Laurie's a beef farmer in his 20s. Right now, he's not too worried.
As a young person reading this, it still probably brings around some uncertainty, but probably hasn't been as volatile as maybe it could have been.
But he feels for sheep and goat farmers who might not be so lucky.
Is there still going to be people impacted by this?
Economists like Greg Jericho from the Australia Institute reckon the long-term effects of all these tariff changes aren't yet clear. But in the short term, the announcement won't have a direct impact on the cost of stuff in Australia. But back in America, it's a different story.
Mostly it's been about just hurting Americans.
Hack on Triple J.
Louise Mylan reporting there, and obviously, yeah, if there's any huge updates, we'll keep you across them in the tariff space.
Hack!
How did something that was so deeply uncool in the 90s and 2000s become so popular in 2025?
On Triple J.
If I said to you, pawn to E4, knight to F3, bishop to C4, do you know what I'm talking about? Do you understand it? If you do, it probably means you don't mind a bit of chess. And if you don't mind a bit of chess, you're not the only one, because chess is having a massive moment. If you're a big chess player, or maybe you're into another old-fashioned hobby, card games, board games in general, why? What do you get out of it? 0439757555. Jackson Worthington's been looking into it.
Loads of people are going to be like, yuck, because apparently only like psychopaths play the London.
I'm in a bar in Perth CBD and it's full of people sitting around chess boards. Cleo's one of them. She's only been here a couple of times, but chess has become a bit of an obsession.
I'm not going to gas myself up. I'm not that good at chess, but I would say like for a beginner, I know certain like openings and things like that. Yeah. So it's like my little stim at the moment.
Cleo's here with her friend Janice. I pulled them away from a table where Janice had just won her first game.
Look, there was no strategy involved. My first win tonight, Jack's first loss.
It's Jack's first time at chess club tonight too. He only met Cleo and Janice about half an hour ago.
Well, he was just downstairs. And then we came up to the bar and he was just sat there by himself and he looked very lonely. So.
Oh, he's having a drink at the bar. He must be a confident guy.
Jack's been trying to find stuff to do that doesn't involve staring at a screen.
It's much easier to have a conversation over a game or something. It kind of breaks the ice and, you know, makes it easier to just get to know someone.
In the past few years, chess has seen a surge in popularity. The Netflix show Queen's Gambit put it back on the radar, and sites like YouTube and Twitch have made learning the game more accessible than ever. The world's best player, Magnus Carlsen, has more than 2 million followers on social media, and has even appeared on the Joe Rogan podcast.
With how YouTube, like, recommendations are working at the moment, I feel like chess has just come up, like, really randomly. That's how I kind of got into chess, because I was watching Gotham Chess on Twitch. It's, like, a fun game and it's sociable.
Chess.com, a website which lets you play chess against people all over the world for free, now has nearly 250 million members. That's up from 100 million in 2023.
Young people are definitely getting into chess now.
Lena runs the Lawson Flats Chess Club here in Perth. She's been in charge for a couple of years, but has noticed a lot more young people coming to play.
They're definitely looking for the social aspect. I think it's definitely about the people to go in a room and know they have a reason to talk to anyone who's there.
This isn't the only chess club attracting young people. There's others here in Perth and in other parts of the country too.
Some people are very intimidated by, like, this idea that everyone at the chess club is going to be really good and they're going to embarrass themselves if they go. But we love to teach beginners and get people involved in chess.
Hannah Sayce helps run the Acid Chess Club in Melbourne. She streams chess on Twitch and is also a Candidate Master. Candidate Master is a title given to chess players who achieve a rank of 2200 or higher. There's only a few thousand in the world.
When I started, I was very average. Like, they have the rating system and I was about 800 ELO. It's just kind of like the beginner starting point. And then I just played, like, nonstop for 4 years.
Hannah started playing chess again during the pandemic. She's noticed a real change in how people talk about chess players.
The reason why I stopped playing chess when I was in primary school was I went into high school and it was, like, really uncool to play chess. And when I tell people, they're like, that's so nerdy. To now when I say, like, oh, I play chess, people are like, oh, that's so cool. Like, they think you must be so smart. I would just want to say that anybody who's considering playing chess, just go out and try it.
Hack on Triple J.
Jackson Worthington reporting there, getting a lot of messages from people who are really into games. Someone says, I'll tell you this, I feel like I'm just a pawn in a chess game. Not quite what I meant, but I hear the sentiment. Someone else says, I play tabletop and board games weekly at the local bowls club. It's simple. Phones go down, gaming and banter kicks off. It's great. Another person says, when I play backgammon, I can't do anything but play backgammon. It becomes a flow state. It's really healthy, that person says. And another person says tabletop games had a huge resurgence during COVID lockdowns, but it's continued. That is true. That's when we started to see them all kick off. We've actually got someone on the line with us who loves a game. We've got Jono from Bathurst. Jono, what game do you like?
Myself and a couple of work colleagues played Magic the Gathering.
Oh, we've got a few people on the text line now who are saying they enjoy Magic the Gathering. What is it about playing a game that you love, Jono?
It's just the way that it brought a lot of myself and a colleagues together, and it's come such a important part of, like, our little repertoire that we actually look forward to it every single day, and it's brought us so much closer together that I actually consider one of my work colleagues one of my best mates.
Oh, that's
because
so...
we play Magic the Gathering.
That's so good to hear, bringing people together. Jono, thank you so much for having a chat with us. I want to talk more about games and the trends that we're seeing, and with us is actually an expert in games, a games researcher at the University of Melbourne, Dr. Melissa Rogerson. Melissa, what is going on? Are you noticing a lot more people getting into board games too?
Absolutely. We've seen it happening over about the past 10 or 12 years, really. But then obviously it got a bit of a boost during COVID. And I'm delighted that that just hasn't gone away. People are still really enjoying sitting down together to play a game.
So what do you think it is? Is it just the COVID lockdowns that put people into new habits? Or do you think there's something else at play here that people are turning to these more analog, old-fashioned styles of entertainment?
Yeah, so I asked myself whether it was just, you know, getting away from screens. But of course, if you just want to get away from screens, you can go cycling, you can read a book, you can do gardening, you can do cooking. There are so many different options. So what is it about games? Surprisingly, it wasn't winning that attracted people. And in fact, the big thing that people talk about and that your reporter touched on is the sociality, right? Sitting around together, playing games with other people. But there's also the idea that there's an intellectual challenge. You have to think about it. You've got to actually work to make the game happen. It's not a passive experience. People love touching the pieces of a game, moving them around, using them to plan things. And the last thing which is a bit of a challenge, I think, for your chess players maybe, is variety. So lots of people talk about, you know, finding the right game for the right group. I've got seven people and we want a game that will last half an hour. What's the best game that we can play?
Are there a lot of new games being invented, Melissa? Like, we're talking about the old ones, but are there other ones coming through?
There are thousands published every year, so it's just impossible to keep track of every single game, but you can get a great sense of what types of games are coming out each year.
And we were just hearing earlier, actually, in the show, we were talking about tariffs, and I've been told that tariffs are actually having a bit of an impact on the games industry too.
They are, because games aren't produced just for a single market. They're produced for the worldwide markets, and there are a lot of publishing houses that are based in the United States. And there's just so much uncertainty now about what the cost of the game is going to be. There are very, very specialist factories in China, in particular, who produce board games. And, you know, you're ordering stuff and you don't know what the final cost is going to be. And if you're ordering thousands of copies of a game, that's a real challenge.
And just very quickly, Melissa, do you have a favourite game yourself?
I have so many favourite games, so very many. The game I'm loving at the moment is a game called Hitster. You scan one side of a card with a mobile phone and it plays a 30-second sample of a song. And you don't have to guess the song itself. You're just trying to line up the songs in order of what year they came out.
I love that. It's bringing old technology, new technology, everything combining there. Look, thank you so much for having a chat with us, Dr. Melissa Rogerson from the Uni of Melbourne. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And so many messages coming through. Josh and Pat say, we love Magic the Gathering and get together a couple of times a week to play and yap till the late hours. It's an amazing way to stay social. Another person, Magic the Gathering and Dungeons and Dragons are both wicked good fun. Someone else, board games are an awesome connection activity and there are so many out there with varying levels of difficulty. And another person says, I'm addicted to Monopoly Deal. Yeah, it's a very popular one. Look, that is all we've got time for on Hack for Now. We're getting a lot of messages about our talk about endometriosis a bit earlier. If you do want to check out that entire story, including all responses, they are on the ABC News website. I'll be back tomorrow. I will catch you then. See ya. Hack.